You're listening to the MechWarriors Heavy Duty Podcast. Here, you will learn...
Oh, wait a minute. That is not MechWarriors. This is MechWarriors. This is the MechWarriors Heavy Duty Podcast. MechWarriors is the game where you invite your friends over to your house and nuke them. The carnage is awesome. The dark destroyer, my experiment, my true vocation, and now my unfortunate friend, you will discover a warrior unable to win. Welcome to episode 4 of the MechWarriors Heavy Duty Podcast. This episode, we will start with the rules proper, starting at the top of the rule book, and I'm just going to start reading down. Read for a little while, stop, do it, and do more next time. The episode this week is not going to have a What Did He Say segment. It's going to have this. Today's episode is brought to you by the word nasty and the number 11. That's because 11 is how many times I said the word nasty in the last podcast. 9 of those was in the unit review of the NovaCat. I think we know what I think about the NovaCat now. And on to the podcast. There are some concepts in this game. If you've played MechWarriors, you're familiar with most of them. If you've played role-playing games, you're familiar with some of the others. Nothing here that's really out there. We didn't have to come up with a whole bunch of stuff. These are kind of standard stuff. First on the block is the random decision rule. Pretty standard stuff. If you have a dispute over a rule or an action, or the rules don't cover something, then the two parties involved each roll a single die. High roll gets the decision. Now, you can apply that for the rest of the game, or just for that one time, or if you want to sit down and talk about it, or whatever. But that way, there's no arguments. It's, well, we can't figure it out. Let's roll, and let's play. The next one is what we have termed reasonable reality. I think I talked about this before. We want it to be as real as possible, but reality just isn't feasible. Scaling would require us to play in a parking lot or something. Because a 48-inch play field is only 576 feet in our scale, in scale. So it's not really right. It just doesn't make any sense for a 30-foot-tall machine to fire a large-caliber ballistic round 200 feet. But we have to play inside a dining room or a bedroom or a garage or something. So we had to sacrifice some of that reality. And reasonable reality is what we come up with as far as playing indoors. The next one is simple. All the rules are fluid. We are constantly changing these. If you decide that you like them and you want to play, you can constantly change them to fit the way you play, the way you like to play, the rules you like. We do that. We're changing this all the time. That's why I can't possibly rewrite the rule book every time. Most of our changes are little ones. We're playing and, hey, we haven't thought of this before. Let's do it. Okay. That's pretty much it. Base contact, if you haven't played a clicks-based game before, all the units are on a round base. Base contact is when two units come together and their bases touch. Those two units are then considered to be immediately adjacent to each other. Not at 2 inches, even if they are 2 inches away because of the size of the bases, they are considered to be at zero-inch range, point blank, if you will. There may be units that are so designed that you can't actually get a unit close enough to touch the base. If you are intentionally going into base contact, then those units will be considered to be in base contact, even if physically you can't do that. facing is simple. It's the direction the unit is facing. All the units in this game have a white marking on their dial that indicates their front arc, the area through which they can fire their weapons. That is their facing. If the unit on the base is facing backwards, the white mark on the base is considered the front. It doesn't matter what the physical piece is doing. You could technically play with just the bases and no pieces, but then that would not be any fun. When you move a unit, you determine its facing at the end of the movement. In most cases, you're not going to end movement facing back the way you came, unless you plot a curving course. But some units, you may be able to do that. A unit may have a front arc of 360 degrees, in which case the numbers on the base of the unit are considered the back of the unit. There's also a gray mark on the back of the unit, which is called the rear arc, which is where attackers get a bonus of 2 to their attack rolls if they are attacking through that rear arc. So no matter if it has a 360-degree front arc, it still has a rear arc, a back end, that you can get up behind and shoot through. This next one may seem silly, but you have to have these definitions because some people, Brian, will push the rules to their limits. We actually call this Brianizing our rules, where someone will come in and play by the letter of the rules. Well, you didn't say I couldn't do that. Well, no, I didn't say you couldn't do it, because it's not feasible to expect a 100-ton tank to jump up and teleport across the... But we didn't say it. And that's an extreme example. And no, nobody's done that to us. But there are people who will do that. We call it Brianizing because of a guy who plays with us sometimes, used to. He hasn't been able to play in a while because he's working out of town. His name, of course, is Brian. And he would do that, and he actually helped us write the rules a lot because he would push our rules to the breaking point. And we finally had to tell him, stop that! And so he did, and he still plays when he can, I guess. But the definitions are friendly and opposing units. It's simple. Friendly units are units that you control, or are units controlled by an ally. Opposing units are units controlled by an opponent. Gee whiz, figure that out. Friendly and opposing status may change during the game. So Ken and I can team up on Dave while Dave and I team up on Ken. It's really complicated. At least it doesn't involve math, because we all know the rule on the math. I've even got my wife saying that now. How sad is that? The next rule is on measuring distances and things like that. When measuring, such as for movement or combat, you will generally measure to and from the center of a base's unit. Most of those bases have a dot in the middle, so you can measure from it. Some of them have it blocked by the unit. You can't see them. You may measure anything on the battlefield at any time. However, keep in mind, your opponents are watching you measure, so they may be able to figure out your plans. So measure 3 or 4 things and then only do one of them. That way they don't know what you're doing. Measure more things than you have units, then they really are confused. There are times when you will measure from the unit itself or from parts of the unit, provided that all of the affected parties agree. Usually this is an elevation situation where you have a unit higher than the other and you're going to measure from the gun, because you can't actually measure from the base because there's a hill in the way or something, but there's a clear line of sight. You know, it's one of those things. We play with the Colossal Mechs, the Ares. We don't play to the center base because it's like 2.5 inches, 2 or 2.5 inches to the center dot. You'd never be able to hit them and still be within range of their weapons. So we generally play to the unit in that case. Modifiers. Combat values, obviously, can be modified during the game. They can be positive or negative. Special equipment, combat enhancement cards, pilots, rank cards, terrain, all kinds of things can apply modifiers. No value can be negative. If a modifier would cause a value to be negative, it is considered to be 0 instead. And unless there is a rule or special equipment that specifically states otherwise, you always use the unit's modified combat values, attack, defense, speed, and damage. Some of them will double it or cut it in half. If you have one, or if you cut a number in half, you will round according to normal rounding rules. So in this case, you would almost always round up So if it's a 7, you would round it to a 4, not a 3. Any unit that is attacking multiple targets can have a whole set of modifiers specific to each target. You may not have the same roll for every opponent. Like the Novacat, shoots 4 times. He can shoot 4 targets if he wants to. Well, then he would have 4 sets of modifiers. Anytime you're reading the rules or you hear me talking about a modifier, always consider that to be in addition to any other modifiers. Unless specifically stated, no single modifier is a standalone item, nor does it exclude other modifiers. There may be situations that are that way, but in general, not. And you may not refuse to use any modifier that applies to your attack. If there is a bonus or a penalty, it must be applied to the attack roll. Again, combat enhancement cards and special equipment may affect that rule. Replacement values. Some game effects will tell you to use a specific number or value in place of one that's already on your dial. Then that's what you do. That's easy. It's called a replacement value. You replace it, you use it. Simple. Special equipment, I talked about that in the last episode. For those who either haven't heard it or are new to the game, every unit has numbers appearing on its base that change according to the damage you take. These numbers may or may not have colored areas, squares, or circles. These colors indicate special equipment for that item. Again, episode 3, I went through the special equipment rules. Most of those are optional. You don't have to use them if you don't want to. We usually do use them, even though they punish us as often as they punish our opponents. Special equipment rules will take precedence over normal game rules. For example, if your unit can only move 8, but he has some special equipment that allows more, then the normal game rule is out, and he can move more if he wants to. Special equipment only affects gameplay while it appears in the stats slot or while a special equipment card is in use. The squares and the circles actually mean something. A special equipment color that is a square means you can use it as long as it's in the dial. If it is a circle, then the rule is this. For infantry and vehicle units, if you use that special equipment, you will take 1 click of damage at the end of the phase. This may or may not remove that special equipment. If the unit is a mech, that unit will take 1 heat for using it, but the combat dial does not get clicked, so the unit still has that ability until it takes damage. Initiative is next, but we generally don't use initiative. We very seldom ever come upon a situation where we have to, because during any given phase, everything is considered to have happened all at the same time. For example, if Ken is shooting at one of my units with his Novacat, and he's shooting 4 shots, and my unit is shooting 6 shots at his Novacat, everything happens all at the same time. So if his 4 shots blow my unit up, all of my shots still got off, and I can still hit him or destroy him all at the same time. Now, that being said, there are times when you have to roll initiative. It's very, very rare, but we have come across them. It's so rare, I can't even think of what the situation would be. But if there is a situation where, gee, I don't know if I got this off before you killed me or whatever, it's simple. You each roll a die, high roll wins. Shutting down. Shutting down is not exclusively for mechs. However, the only time a vehicle or infantry unit can be shut down is as a result of an EMP from a nuclear explosion. Mechs can be shut down by weapons or special equipment or anything like that. They can actually be shut down on purpose, too. You can use that as a tactic to shut your mech down to make him easier to hit. There's a reason for it sometimes. So any unit can be shut down in the right situation, but usually it's just mechs. The oops, we forgot rule is easy if, during play, you discover that a rule was overlooked or performed wrong. Too bad. Once an action is resolved, it should not be redone. Now, if you have a new player who doesn't know any of the rules, you can go back and do it again. Or someone honestly forgot and you think they should, you want to be fair and let them do it, that's fine. But in general, if it wasn't caught by any of the players involved, it happened. When it's discovered, the rules should apply as normal for the rest of the game, but accidents can't be taken back. Accidents happen, and no one should be penalized for that. If someone cheats and you don't catch it, then you should pay better attention. Factions, clans, and houses. As I've said before, when we play, we don't use factions, clans, and houses. However, there's nothing that says you can't use them with these rules. So if you want to use them, that's fine. You want to play a regular timeline from Battletech, go for it. It doesn't matter. We don't, so I won't be talking about them very much, simply because I don't know anything about them. We have the edge of the world in our game, which is kind of a standard thing. When you're playing on a battlefield, this battlefield's going to have edges. A 48 by 48 is going to have edges beyond which the game cannot extend. No unit may travel beyond that edge. No shot that goes beyond that edge can come back. If you place a unit at the edge, yeah, the base can hang over a little bit because the base actually, quote, doesn't exist. But the unit itself may not hang over the edge. It can give you a slight tactical advantage in that a unit can be backed up to the edge, and that can reduce or even eliminate your rear arc, which I talked about before, which gives a +2 to attacks. So you can do that, back up there, and they can't get to the rear arc. The next to the last one in this section is first mention. If there is any conflict between rules in this document, the first time the rule is mentioned is the rule that is played. Simply because I'm human, I write this stuff up and I don't memorize it. It's a lot to memorize. I know a lot of it, but I don't memorize it. So if I say something early on and I say something different later and they conflict, the first time is what you go with. The last one in this section is something we took from Axis and Allies War at Sea, which is can't trumps can. And we've actually had to use this in the last game. If you have two conflicting abilities, the ability which prevents takes precedence over the ability which allows. So Ken's Spectro, his little raven that runs so freaking fast, has Camo Master with the pilot. The pilot ability means that when he is next to hindering terrain, you cannot draw a line of fire to him. There are special cards and special pilot abilities which allow you to draw a line of fire to any target in range, like streak missiles or some other pilot abilities. But you can't draw a line of fire to Spectro with the pilot, but you can because of yours. So the rule is can't trumps can. If two conflicting rules, the one that prevents is the one you go with. It makes life much simpler. Next, building your battle force. This is easy. All the players agree on a number of points total, 1,000, 1,500, 200, whatever. You build your team up to that number of points. That's easy. The only real rule is that uniques with the same collector number may not appear in the same battle force. They may appear on different battle forces, but not on the same one. But you can capture one on another team and then have two on your team. If there's only two players, your starting edges should be directly opposite each other across your gaming table. Normally, all the units on a battle force must start the game within 1 inch of at least one other unit. There may be times when you do that differently. That's up to you. That's pretty much it. I mean, you put your numbers out, build your team together according to the numbers, put them on the table, kill each other. Remember, nuke a friend. New player insertion, I have under building your battle force because it's the only place we could find to put it. If you begin a game and somebody else shows up later, hey, I want to play. Well, you can't all go back to beginning because you've been doing stuff and got strategies. So the way we came up with is, it's a little convoluted, but it works. You divide the play service into four sections. Each assign a number 1 through 4. The new player rolls D6, ignoring 5 and 6. That result is his deployment zone. Then either that zone is divided into 6 sections and he rolls a die for each piece, or you can just let him put your stuff out over there. The number of points the new player uses needs to be discussed because you don't want him to come in with 1,000 points if everybody else has been shot down to 750. So do that according, kind of come up with an idea of, well, it should be about this much, and then put them out. Then that's good to go. You can start playing. That's easy. All right. The next section, which will be the last section for this podcast, is the phased order of play. You hear me talking about phases, but I haven't really explained a whole lot. So we're going to explain it. We have simultaneous action as our style of play. Everything happens at the same time. Movement, attack, damage, everything. But to make it more reasonable, we had to break it up into phases, make it easier so it's not chaotic. And there's things that might happen a little bit later, but, you know, 1 second later in the real world. So we included that in as a phase. The first phase is the announcement phase. Basically, this is where you go around saying, this unit's moving, this unit's attacking, this unit's not doing anything, this unit's scratching his head wondering what to do, la-da-da-da-da. But you don't have to give any details. This unit is moving, doesn't tell you where it's moving. This unit is attacking, doesn't tell you who he's attacking. This is when you say, this unit is receiving a command, but you don't have to say what that command is. You do have to say, if it's a post-move command, and most commands are post-move phase commands, but you need to do that. That's it. If you have an assault order, you have to announce it. This one's doing an assault order. But you don't have to give any details. Next is the artillery targeting phase. All artillery fires, though no attack roll is made. We have started using a digital camera or a camera phone for targeting. We measure to make sure things are in range, and we take a picture, an overhead picture containing landmarks so we can see where it's going. Because remember, artillery attacks the ground, not a unit. If you take a picture of a unit, the unit moves, the shot doesn't move with it, the shot stays there. Then, when it comes time later to reveal that, we go through the pictures, and I'll go through that in a minute. So, we take pictures, take a picture of the unit, then take a picture of each of its targets. Remember, some of them have multiple shots. Then you go on, and generally, you leave the room. Everybody else leaves the room, goes to visits, goes to the bathroom, goes whatever, or just turns around and talks, whatever. You know, be gentlemen about it. Don't cheat. Next is the move phase. The move phase is where venting occurs for mechs, and any unit that is moving gets to move. Gee whiz, imagine that. The move phase, that's when they move. This does include the moving portion of a combination order, such as an assault order. We use markers, as I've said before, to mark the starting point of each unit's move because we have things that happen at the halfway point. So we have to know where the starting point was. The combat phase is all combat other than artillery. That's why it's called the combat phase. Infiltrate movements are performed at this point. If you are making a capture attempt, this is where you do it because that's a normal attack. If you're doing assault order, this is the phase where you roll your attack rolls and it's just normal combat. The next phase is the first damage phase. All damage from the previous combat phase are applied. All heat from the previous move and combat phases are applied and rolled for. That's about it. You know, it's damage phase. Do damage. That's it. The next phase is the one I refer to that's kind of unusual in gaming. It's called the post-move phase. Any actions which are after the move happen now. However, you may not assign a normal action to occur during this phase. Actions occurring during this phase must be assigned by another unit through command or be the result of some other battlefield situation. Those situations arise every now and then, but we don't write them down because you'll know when it happens. Oh, I need to do that now. Well, just when you do it. The second damage phase. Again, damage, heat, and repair clicks from the post-move phase are applied and heat results are rolled at this time if necessary. Next phase is the artillery resolution phase. All the artillery attacks from the targeting phase are now hitting. They've taken all this time to go across the battlefield, and now they're hitting the ground wherever they hit. You roll your attack rolls. You'll drift according to how much you miss. That will all be covered when I talk about combat in another podcast. During the artillery resolution phase, you simply show your opponents the picture of the target, then roll the attack, calculate drift and damage and everything. The third damage phase is where you apply the artillery damage. That's pretty much it for phases. Notes afterwards, if unit has a post-move attack assigned by way of a command, that attack is resolved after any attacks which involve the unit in the previous phases. That's why we have the damage phase in between, so that the unit may be weakened or even destroyed. If you issue a command for post-move and the unit that you are attacking has been destroyed, you've wasted the command. I think we decided that you could actually make that event if your target is destroyed, so you don't waste the command, but that's the only time. If during movement two opponents' paths intersect, the unit's got to stop at the point of intersection. Obviously, a mech does not have to stop if it crosses paths with infantry, but the infantry needs to stop. Any planned attacks by those units are canceled, but they may be able to attack each other if the players agree. Non-mechanized infantry, that is infantry that's not wearing combat armor or battle armor, doesn't make anybody stop, but other non-mechanized infantry, obviously. The non-mechanized infantry that stops, though, may be able to attack the rear arc of the passing unit. So a vehicle that makes non-mechanized infantry stop might get shot on the way by. Something to think about. If there is a large difference in the speed values of the involved units, such that one is so fast that the other one would never have intersected with it, or if one of the units is substantially closer to the point of intersection, then you probably want to roll initiative on that. For example, Spectro runs at 22. My Atlas walks at 4, maybe 5, without a pilot. It's conceivable that Spectro could run past my unit before my unit got there and could get in base contact with him, just because Spectro's so fast. That happens. One thing we do, and I have it on the rule book as the helpful hint, is that at the beginning of the game, we make a list of our units on a sheet of paper. Generally, it's the only paper we use in the game. Beside the names of the units, as the game progresses, you make tick marks as they take damage. Simply because when they take the damage, you don't click it off right then. You wait till the end of the phase. And you have attacks or there's other stuff that's happening. You don't want to forget what damage you've taken. Well, you may want to forget, but your opponent doesn't want you to forget. So you make little tick marks. Then you pick it up, click them off, and scratch those out. And if you get repaired, tick, 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 and you when you apply them, you're good to go. That really helps. I have a form in Excel that's written up to help with that, but I really don't have any way to attach it into the Word document easily. So if you download the rules, you won't see it in there. I think that's going to be it for this episode. Next episode, we start on combat. Combat is going to be a rather long section. Will probably be 2 podcasts. Movement will probably be 2 podcasts. Then after movement, we will have the special rules for each of the 3 types. So we have a podcast for infantry, podcast for vehicles, and a podcast for mechs. The podcast for mechs might actually be 2 podcasts because there's a lot of special rules. I will be doing a short little thing on terrain, and I plan on doing a podcast on making terrain, which is going to be interesting because this is not a video podcast. I have to describe it to you and make all kinds of noises with styrofoam and things like that. That's it for this episode. Don't forget the game reports and unit reviews will be separate files as normal. One of the game reports is kind of special because the entire thing is done live. Dave and Ken and I recorded at the end of every turn. It's short and sweet and kind of fun to listen to. We will talk to you later. Remember, have fun, play fair, don't cheat, and nuke a friend.
The Mech Warriors Heavy Duty Podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. This means you can give the podcast to anyone you want, but you can't make any money off of it, and you can't break up the file. Mech Warriors, Battletech, and all related terms are copyright their respective owners. No claim of ownership is made.